No Sadiatis would like to thank Verity Credit Union for sponsoring this episode. It's a local credit union that has been headquartered in Seattle since 1933 and have 6 branches throughout the Puget Sound. Verity is not-for-profit and puts any money they make into good rates, products, and services for their members. They have credit cards, loans of all kinds, and even a checking account that refunds $25 per month in ATM fees on qualifying accounts. Verity is federally insured by the NCUA and an Equal Housing Opportunity Lender. Anyone who lives, worships, or attends school in Washington State can become a member, and they would love to have you. Learn more and apply at veritycu.com or call 206-440-9000. Welcome back to another edition of Nos Audietes, sponsored by Full Pull Wines, Verity Credit Union, the Seattle Boat Show, and Golasso. This is episode 121, and we're recording on Sunday, November 3rd, 2013. I am your host, Jeremiah Shannon, and I'm joined by my co-host and temporary engineer, Aaron Campo. Zach Woosley is out on assignment, a.k.a. his honeymoon. Since last we met, the Sounders have continued the roller coaster season into the playoffs. They opened with a resounding and confidence-building win over the Colorado Rapids, only to follow it up by falling behind by 2 goals to the Portland Timbers before grabbing a late goal to make the deficit in the second leg far more manageable. Obviously, it was far from an ideal result, but considering what we've grown accustomed to, I suppose it's not that bad. Not that you need a reminder, but the loss dropped the Sounders to 0-4-2 with a 9-1 goal difference in the first leg of 2-legged series in the MLS Cup playoffs. The good news is that they are 3-0 with a 5-1 goal difference in the past 3 second legs. Any of the results they got in those legs would, of course, at least be enough to send it into overtime and possibly even win the game. So I guess the question is at this point, Aaron, what is your emotional state going into Thursday?
Well, it's a hell of a lot better than it would have been if Ozzie hadn't scored that goal in the 90th minute. I can tell you that much.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was such a frustrating game because the Timbers did 2 things well. They did 2 things really well. And that was it. I mean, they didn't play particularly well, and Caleb Porter can talk all he wants about how that was the plan all along.
Right.
And I'm sure to some extent it was, but I doubt that he anticipated going.
I mean, they really had 2 chances on goal. I think they ended up with 5 shots on goal, but really – Hahnemann was never tested aside from the 2 goals,
right,
which they of course scored. And they didn't, I mean, they didn't even really have dangerous possession. They gave up 60% of the possession. You know, I suppose a lot of that possession was probably not particularly dangerous for the Sounders, but the Sounders had 11 corner kicks. They only gave up 1, and they had probably 6, I'm guessing, free kicks inside 40 yards. And the Sounders obviously didn't capitalize on those situations, but I don't think you go into a game thinking we're going to give up close to 20 set pieces in dangerous areas and just kind of cross our fingers.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, you can't go into a game with that as your approach. And you know, I think that it's definitely true that Porter was happy to give up a little more of the possession, and I think it totally makes sense for them to say, you know, we're on the road. We are a lot fresher than they are, so we'll just let them tire themselves out and beat them on the counter. And that makes sense. And they were able to, you know, to make some good moves on the counters, but, you know, they didn't really play that well. And I thought in general, the Sounders did play pretty well. And you know, it's just, I'm not convinced that the Timbers are a better team than the Sounders. But when they can come in to, you know, into your stadium, put in kind of a subpar performance and still end up winning 2-1, you know, it's a pretty frustrating thing. But with that said, you know, I think that if the Sounders can go down there on Thursday and they can, you know, they can just execute, they can just finish their chances, they have a chance at winning it. I mean, I think Portland's probably the more likely team to advance, and that sucks. I really hate saying that, but... but I don't think that all hope is lost by any stretch.
No, and I think if you're looking for rays of hope, and I would think that we like to provide those kinds of things, is that the Sounders really don't need to do anything crazy to pull this out. I mean, essentially, if the Sounders win 1-0, this game goes into overtime, and then in overtime, it's anybody's game. You know, we've seen this in many series. This, you know, it's like usually the team that scores first is going to win the overtime. But even then, if it goes to penalties, it's really anyone's game. And there's really almost no rhyme or reason to who wins penalties oftentimes. So, I wouldn't say that I like the Sounders' chances. I don't give them a great chance to like, I'm not going down to Portland expecting the Sounders to win this, but I don't think it's at all unrealistic let's put it this way. I wouldn't be at all surprised if the Sounders win this series. And it's, you look back through the history of MLS Cup playoffs. Apparently there have been 8 instances where the home team lost the first leg. And in 3 of them, the home team, they came back and they actually won the series on the road. And you have to go all the way back to last year to find the last time this happened. If you remember, the Galaxy actually lost 1-0 on the home leg to the Earthquakes, and then they came back and won 3-1 on the road. And then before that, you got to go all the way back to 2010 when the San Jose Earthquakes, of all teams, which were not a very good team, lost the home leg to the Red Bulls and then traveled across the country and won 2-0, shockingly enough. So, you know, it's like these things happen. And it's not to say that it's going to happen, but I think anyone that's sitting here saying, oh, well, woe is us, the series is over, all hope is lost, is just being, you know, kind of pessimistic for the sake of being pessimistic. Now, of course, the Sounders could go in and, you know, they give up an early goal and, you know, they're obviously against the eight ball. But, you know, if the Sounders score, they don't even have to score early. They can score in the 90th minute, essentially, and still feel pretty good about their chances going into overtime. I mean, the Sounders will be better rested than they were going into this game. They should have more healthy players. DeAndre Yedlin seems to be, most people expect him to be available. The big question yesterday wasn't that he was incapable of playing. It's that he's never apparently in his career played hurt. And so they really were just kind of unsure what they were going to get out of him. And I think it was probably the smart thing to do to let him rest. And Obafemi Martins, who knows at this point? I mean, it's becoming a crazy situation. But, you know, if Obafemi Martins can get himself ready to play on Thursday, I mean, I think that changes things a lot. I mean, if you can insert Obafemi Martins into forward next to Eddie Johnson and you keep the diamond instead of Lamar Nagel, essentially, who, of course, will miss the game on yellow card accumulation. I mean, God, I really like the chances at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Yedlin missing last night, I mean, I think you're right that it was probably the wrong decision, but I think that it's a bigger deal than it might seem on the surface, because, you know, in that formation, Yedlin is the width that the Sounders have in attack. If he's not out there, it's really compromised. And, you know, you kind of saw that, I think, last night. I mean, the Sounders had guys getting into good positions, but, you know, the shots they were getting off weren't great just because it was so compact in the center of the field. And when Morrow came on and it got a little bit wider, I think the quality of the chances improved. The Sounders just don't have the pieces to play without any width in attack. And having Zach Scott at right back really kind of made it difficult for them to do that. So if he comes back, I feel, you know, much better than if he's out. And you're right. I mean, if Oba can play, that's a huge change. It's just a huge, huge change. I think that with Dempsey playing in sort of a attacking midfield position, Oba and EJ are a really, really great striker pairing. So I'm hopeful that Oba will play, because if they do, I think it moves the chances much more in the Sounders' favor. I still think they're clearly the underdogs, but it's hard to deny that, you know, that if Oba's playing, the Sounders are the more talented team. But, you know, at the same time, who knows whether Oba's going to be able to play. It's impossible to say at this point.
And I suppose now would be a good time to just issue a reminder. I kind of assumed, because this is now the 5th year that the Sounders are in the MLS playoffs, that everyone kind of knew the rules. But it's worth reminding everyone that there are no away goals in MLS. So essentially, the goals just count like they would normally count. There's no tiebreaker. There's none of this stuff. So if the Sounders, like I said, so that's why if the Sounders were to just win 1-0, it would actually go into overtime. I know a lot of people are used to Champions League, whether it be in Europe or CONCACAF, but where the away goals are the first tiebreaker, but that's not the case here. So the Senators do not need to score two goals in order to take the lead or to essentially tie the score. I don't know. I mean, I guess that's inexact, but they don't need to score more than one to get this game to overtime is the point I'm trying to make. But
which
anyway,
is probably good.
Which is probably good, exactly. I will add that the other positives to take away from this game is I thought Ozzie Alonso, even if you take his goal out of it, I thought he looked like the vintage Ozzie Alonso that we were used to, that we were saying was an MVP candidate earlier this year. He was absolutely everywhere. He, you know, he has the goal, obviously, which is a huge goal. But beyond that, he was 54 for 59 passing, which obviously is a great help, even if most of those passes are square or even backwards. But just having that player in the defensive midfield to help kind of shuttle the ball around is hugely helpful. He was all over the field defensively. He had something like 12 recoveries, and he totally took Diego Valeri out of this game. I mean, there has been a lot of talk about how Diego Valeri has been, you know, the maestro for the Timbers. But, you know, Valeri and Will Johnson, for that matter, neither one of them, I thought, had a particularly big impact on the match. And a lot of that credit, I think, goes to Ozzie Alonso. The Senators, obviously, their two breakdowns were on plays where the diamond really kind of was compromised because they were able to break the Senators down on the wing, and that's out, kind of outside of Ozzie's purview at that point. And really, the center backs probably have to own both goals. Ultimately, I mean, the passers needed to be shut down or closed down much better than they were. But ultimately, John Kennedy Hurtado cannot lose his man at the near post on the first goal. And Jimmy Traore actually, after the game, told me that he takes 100% blame on the second goal because he knows, as anybody, if you're going to leave your feet in the box, you got to win the ball. And he didn't win the ball.
And I mean, all credit to Nagby because it was a great touch that he made.
It was a great touch.
It was a great piece of play, but you know, he's a player capable of doing that. So it makes it that much more important to make sure you get the ball in that situation.
Yeah, exactly. And so the Senators have to obviously avoid these kind of I don't know if they're totally mental mistakes, but they got to avoid these kind of mistakes in Portland. And if they can figure out a way to score, I mean, if they can score an early goal, this series just gets totally turned on its head. One other thing I wanted to mention on Ozzie's goal is I think Shalrie Joseph, I'm sure there was a lot of groaning going on when he was subbed in, and I can understand that. But I think he deserves at least some credit for getting the assist on it. I mean, it wasn't necessarily a great play, but he's the guy who got his head on the ball that got it to Ozzie Alonso. Without that header, it doesn't, you know, Ozzie doesn't end up with the ball at his feet. And the Sounders are going down 2-0. So I think I was kind of shocked at how many people were, even after the game, upset about the Shalrie Joseph substitution. Because, look, I mean, I get it. If you're from a process standpoint, you don't like it. But sometimes when, even if you don't like the process, if the results, especially when it comes to playoffs, if the results go your way, you kind of got to just kind of grin and bear it and say, okay, well, I guess it worked out that time. I'll keep my mouth shut. But anyway, I the other thing I'm encouraged by is that Clint Dempsey is starting to look like the player that we expected him to be. Now, he had, I want to say, six shots yesterday, which ties a season high for him. He put only two of them technically on goal, but he probably could have had three goals. He should have had three goals, probably. Maybe not should have. He could have had three goals. Right. He had the header that hit off the crossbar. He had a free kick that hit off the crossbar, although I don't really think that was that, you know, that's being nice to give him credit for that one. Anyway, it did hit off the crossbar. He had another free kick that Donovan Ricketts made a great save on. The one that really kills me, though, is that he had a left-footed attempt from inside the box where the ball kind of fell to him, very similar to the Alonso goal. And of course, he hit it wide. Now, who knows what ends up happening if he scores that? Maybe Alonso doesn't get his goal. Who knows? But, you know, if he finishes one of those, it's probably a different series. That said, he did a great job of getting himself into dangerous positions. I thought he was effective at helping engineer the attack. He was helpful. And the reason the Sounders got 17 set pieces in dangerous areas was because a lot of what Dempsey was doing in terms of drawing fouls, in terms of putting teammates into dangerous areas. And, you know, I don't know. Where did you fall, though, on him taking the most of the corner kicks? I mean, I know a lot of people would have much rather seen him, you know, in the box fighting to get a goal rather than serving those in.
Yeah, I mean, I would count myself in that camp, and I also just don't think his corners are very good. I know that that's kind of, you know, sacrilege to say that something he does isn't good, but I really don't like his corners. I don't think they're especially effective. The low-driven corners can be fine, I think, but considering that EJ is on this team and he was on the pitch last night, I feel like the ball should be higher going into the box. But, you know, I don't know who's better taking in them.
I guess Evans is probably the alternative, and I guess maybe to some degree it's kind of half dozen of one, six of the other in terms of who do you rather have in the box. I mean, Dempsey's a world-class finisher, though, so I guess he's probably the guy I would want in the box.
Yeah, I know he wants to – I know that part of it is probably trying to keep him out of, you know, pushy-shovey kind of situations with his shoulder. And I know part of it is him wanting to kind of take charge. But he's just too good in the box to not have him there. And I think Evan's corners are not any worse than his. So it's like if you're taking out one of your best finishers out of the box and you have a guy that's just as good at taking corners as he is. I don't really get it.
I mean, I guess to hear Siggy tell it, he basically left it up to Clint to decide. It was between him and Evans, and apparently Siggy is, you know, I mean, I guess that kind of makes sense, is that you ultimately let the player, and that's kind of his whole style, is he lets the players kind of sort this stuff out. And if Dempsey insists on taking the corners, you let him take the corners, I suppose, especially in the first leg. Maybe after the first leg, he says, look, Clint, you need to be in the box. We need you scoring goals. We don't need you, you know, taking corners. Especially considering this might be the last game of the season, and if you hurt your shoulder again, then, you know, you have the offseason to get fixed, I guess.
Right. Exactly.
Which is a horrible attitude, I suppose. But, and then on the other side of the coin, man, Eddie Johnson, I thought, had maybe his best game in a Sounders uniform against the Rapids. I mean, even aside from his goal, which was a great goal, you know, it was really a great goal, and it was a great pass from Dempsey, he was everywhere against the Rapids. He was winning. I mean, it seemed like he won every 50-50 ball. He was, you know, he was crisp with his passing. He wasn't dawdling on the ball. I mean, he was Eddie Johnson that I would have no problem giving a designated player contract to. And then as good as he was against the Rapids, I was shocked to see that he just was kind of invisible against the Timbers.
Yeah, he definitely didn't have his best game against the Timbers. He looked really, really tired. I think that was part of it. I think that also that he's the kind of player that excels when he has a lot of space to move in. And that's pretty much the one thing that you're not going to get against the Timbers. They are not going to give you a lot of space to operate. They do kind of clog things up. And so his avenues that he kind of makes his money in aren't there, or they're not as easy to hit. And they also did a pretty good job marking him, especially on set pieces. I was impressed by that, because the Timbers are not always an especially well-organized defensive unit, but they did a really good job of kind of keeping him from beating them, which is huge against the Sounders. I mean, if EJ can get his head to set pieces, the Sounders are probably going to win. And, he just couldn't find the ball. So credit to the Timbers for that. I think that if Obafemi Martins is in the game instead of Lamar Nagel, he's probably going to be a lot more dangerous, because the Timbers did not seem especially concerned with Lamar Nagel. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want to be too hard on Eddie Johnson in terms of his overall play. He actually, you know, he was decent in terms of ball winning and even distribution, but he just wasn't in the box almost at all. He only had according to Opta, he only had three touches inside the penalty area, which is not good for him. He had two shots. One of them was a header where you really are kind of used to seeing him finish those header. It was he got a free look at a header off a Clint Dempsey set piece, and he hit it wide. I mean, it wasn't the worst it wasn't the worst attempt, but it was just not. It just he just didn't look like the same player. He wasn't didn't have the fire that we're kind of used to seeing him. So, you know, if that's a guy who shows up against the Timbers on Thursday, I think the Sounders are in, you know, in much better shape. If he the guy who played against the Rapids, that is. So there's reasons to be optimistic, I guess, is what I'm saying. And there's no reason that the Sounders need to be, you know, down in the dumps and losing their minds and whatever. And I think that was probably the right attitude for the team to have, to say that, look, it's halftime. Did we want to be down? Did we want to go to Portland down 2-1? Clearly not. There's no question about that. But to say that it's a disaster, I think that's probably overstating it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I guess, and so the final thing I'll end with, all right, I'll take it back. We'll get into Michael Schmerning versus Hahnemann. We have a question from a listener, so maybe we'll just hold it for then. But, you know, I will say I didn't think Hahnemann was horrible against the Rapids or against the Sounders, against the Timbers, my God. and I'll take it back. Where is your confidence level with Michael Schmerning right now? I mean, I thought he was decent against the Rapids, but he had some just absolute strange out-of-character gaffes, I thought, also. And, of course, one of them got him a red card.
Yeah, I still would rather him be the starting keeper. I think that Hahnemann is kind of similar to what we saw from Keller in terms of, you know, he has some very obvious limitations. He's good at putting you in situations where it makes it difficult to take advantage of those limitations. But if you can find those openings, you're going to beat him. And Schmerning is just more capable of the spectacular. And, you know, it's, I think the odds of the spectacular save, saving the Sounders season are a lot higher than Schmerning making an error that costs the team the game. And I think that, you know, we make a big deal out of goalkeeping errors when they're made, and that's totally reasonable. But I think the reason that they're a big deal is that goalkeepers don't make bad mistakes that often. And so they kind of stand out when it happens. And we've talked about this with the defense before as well, where, you know, I think people blow out of proportion the mistakes just because they're so obvious to everyone, and when they're made, they usually end up in a goal. But I'm just not really worried about Schmerning doing anything that's gonna hurt us. And I'm, you know, I think he's probably got a better shot at doing something that saves us than Hahnemann does.
Very good, very good. Well, we're gonna end it there. Coming on next segment is Michael Orr of Soccer Made in Portland to give us a little bit of the Portland perspective, and then we're gonna come back. We're gonna take your questions. We're going to take the answers to, it was actually a reader submitted Golasso question of the week, which was, what kind of candy would the Sounders be? Hard hitting stuff that we're doing here. And before we do that, I just want to remind everyone, that you can get Golassos at QFC right now. They are doing a special where you can get two of the all natural energy drinks, for $3, and you can get two of the all natural hydration drinks for $4. So thanks a lot to Golasso, who is a continued sponsor of Nos Arietes, and we'll be right back.
Take it out of all my misery. This episode of Nos Audientes is sponsored by Full Pull Wines, a Seattle-based wine cellar that happens to be owned by ECS members. Their focus is mostly on wines of the Pacific Northwest, and they distribute their wines to members of their mailing list. Joining the email list is free, and there are no obligations to buy. If you see a wine you like, you make a request. The wine arrives at the warehouse, where you can pick it up or have it shipped to you directly. They also do tastings at the warehouse, which is in the Soto neighborhood. So if you're interested in joining their mailing list or learning more about them, visit FullPullWines.com. That's FullPullWines.com.
Portland, which is a podcast which you should probably listen to even if you hate the Timbers with all of your energy. It's a good podcast, and sometimes they have us on, and Mike's a friend of the show. So anyway, welcome to the show, Mike. Can I call you Mike?
You can.
Good, because that's what I was going to do. And you can be followed on Twitter. You have like 13 Twitter accounts, right? Give us one that you would prefer people to follow you on.
So I guess based on the audience for this show, I suppose at Michael Orr FTBL is probably the one where I spend more time talking about Portland and MLS and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And so his street, so this is, if you're going to be listen to or follow one Twitter guy on from the Timbers, this is it, because he's actually hated by the Timbers army. So, you know, he's got street cred.
It's definitely still the case, but I'm not affectionately known as dipshit, which I'm not sure if I can say that on the show or not.
Yeah,
but
you can say that
on the show.
That's your partner, Kelly McLean.
Yeah, my co-host on the podcast, Kelly McLean, was actually called a dipshit on Twitter by Merritt Paulson. So
that's real street cred.
That's real street cred. So I've got a ways to go before I catch that.
Yeah. So you were in the house, as we say here in Seattle, yesterday. What did you think of the?
Is that a regional thing?
That's a regional thing. Yeah, that's a regional thing here. What did you think of the Timbers' performance vis-a-vis winning 2-1? Off to a great start.
Vis-a-vis is something I need to incorporate into my show. I guess relative to 2-1, I guess it's a little disappointing in the way it happened. Now, I would be absolutely lying if I was to sit here and say I expected that the Timbers were going to win and that they could have won 2-0. That was not what I was expecting to happen.
But the
fact that they were 2-0 in the 90th minute makes it pretty disappointing that they only go back with a 1-goal lead. After the Alonso goal and the way that it happened too was just stupid. Caleb Porter hates long throw in. So he's probably absolutely furious at the moment that Ziggy didn't just pass one into his own net just to even things out, at the end of the game.
Long throw ins are just anti-soccer, frankly.
They are. And Caleb Porter I'm kind of joking, but Caleb Porter has said explicitly on the record that he hates long throw-ins and doesn't consider them part of soccer, and that he would never that he would never ever have his team score one.
Well, yeah, so, bad news, yeah. Caleb.
Yeah, so too bad. I mean, one happened, and
he's more than happy to pack the box and to feed concede 60% of possession and all that kind of stuff, but no, well, long throw-ins. That's...
And, you know, that's, you know, from a Portland perspective, that's actually kind of a disappointing thing about the game as well, because I think people understand the pragmatism behind that, you know, that, okay, you're ahead 2-0 in a game you didn't expect to be ahead 2-0, and you're on the road, and you just want to get out of there with a win under any circumstances. So I think it's understandable, but, you know, the Timbers, and I was talking to Richard Farley about this last night, because we were driving back to Seattle after the game, and, you know, we were kind of talking about how disappointing it is, because the Timbers sort of pride themselves on playing all the time. You know, that mini games, they really just play. Even if they're ahead, even if they're behind, they kind of play the same way, in the same style, the same formation throughout the game. And, you know, when they do press upfield like that, and they do, you know, hold the ball and pass it around, they're really fun to watch and exciting. Even if you don't like the Timbers, I mean, you know, forget yesterday's game for a second. You know, just in general, it's a pretty entertaining style to watch. But when they get away from that and go to sort of just a normal soccer style of just dropping back into the box and hoping not to concede, they're not really interesting at all. And they did that for basically 20 minutes. You know, when they brought Szymanski in, that was kind of the signal. Okay, game's over from Portland's perspective, and they're just going to try and kill it. And I thought that was a little too early. So having not yet answered the question, I think, you know, it's a tremendous result, even though 2-1 was the final, because, I mean, it's going to be tough for Seattle, you know, with Nagel out and other injuries, sort of limiting the sort of full depth of roster for the Sounders. I think it's going to be a difficult ask to go down into Portland and win by two. I mean, nobody's done that all year. The Timbers did lose on the road by two to Salt Lake, but they haven't lost by two at home, and they've barely even given up two goals to other teams at home. So it makes for, I think, an exciting and interesting and compelling second leg, but certainly a difficult one for Seattle, I think.
Oh, it's definitely worse than being for the Sounders to have won that game. There's no question about it. But yeah, that, you know, what we talked a lot about it in the first segment on the show, that goal changes the series tremendously, in that the Sounders, I mean, they do, I guess technically they would need to win by two goals, but they don't really, I mean, I guess they don't really, they can win 1-0 in regulation and grab a goal in overtime, or they could go to penalties and potentially win it there. So I mean, the Sounders can essentially play a normal game.
But yeah, that's true.
We don't need to focus on that so much. I did want, you bring this up, and I thought it was an interesting point, and I too was talking to Richard about this, but not in the car, so probably not for 3 hours. But I thought it was interesting, you know, that the Timbers kind of got to this point by playing like the beautiful game that Porter has liked to kind of talk about all the time, and do all this stuff where, you know, you take pride in not taking long throw-ins. And I'm sure he loves the fact that they don't score a ton of goals on set pieces, and that, you know, most of their goals come from the run of play. But yet the last two times we've seen them play at the Sounders, they've been more than happy to kind of sit back and protect leads,
yeah,
and play kind of negative football and not really attack and sit back and wait for the counter. And he was almost glowing, it seemed like, in the press conference afterwards, talking about how he was so happy that they were able to, what was the, torch they them on
roasted
on counterattacks. Like, he was so proud of himself. And part of me, as a American soccer fan, I take some honest joy in him being pragmatic, because I think that's the reality of especially the American game. And if he's really going to be, you know, if he's going to rise to the level eventually of being, you know, the top coach in the country, then he's going to have to learn to be pragmatic at times. And so it's good to see that he's adjusting, but there's also part of me that takes like this gleeful, like, oh, you're coming down into the muck with us. well, because he, well, I mean, that was nothing pretty about what Portland did yesterday. I mean, that was a great finish by Nagby, and it was a great setup and a great finish by Johnson. Yeah. But really, the rest of the game, I mean, Valeri was almost totally absent. You know, a lot of what we think of as the pretty things that they do, you know, Nagby didn't have a ton of really dangerous touches, although he made the ones he had count. I'm sorry, you were going to say something.
Well, I think it's a a fair point to say that, you know, Porter needs to learn to be pragmatic. And I think, you know, from a national perspective, or maybe even from a regional perspective, that's not, you know, it's only kind of cluing in time to time and not every single week. You know, you still kind of get the reverberations, especially now that the national press has really kind of jumped all over the Timbers and been talking all about them and Porter for Coach of the Year and all that stuff. But, you know, since September started, really, the Timbers have been playing much, much more conservatively, and they've been playing much more direct, and their numbers, you know, take away the absurd result at Chivas, the 5-0, you know, the numbers have only been okay relative to their, you know, sort of, you know, 450 to 500 completed passes numbers that they were doing earlier in the year. He's really scaled that back, it kind of in the face of needing to get results against good teams. What's somewhat interesting, or at least interesting to me, is that most of the time, because of the way the schedule worked out, you know, the Timbers had the Galaxy and the Rapids and the Sounders and Salt Lake all at home, those four games within 5 weeks. And, you know, the sort of, if they were going to do anything, they had to get results in those games. And it turned out that those games were home games. And so really what we've seen in the last 2 months is a much more conservative approach in home games, whereas on the road, he's felt a little more licensed to kind of go for it. And those are the games you see 5-0 at Chivas and you see 2-2 in Vancouver. The games just were a little more open on the road. And that's, you know, I think in some ways, despite being a little bit cautious and not fully expressive, you know, through a lot of the game, the Timbers were still, I mean, they were ahead 2-0. It's like exactly like the two games that they've recently had on the road. And then they kind of closed up shop because of that same realization that, hey, you know, we actually have to win this game now that we're ahead, you know, like you can't, like they've been drawing games all year and you can't, like that would have been a disaster to be up 2-0 in Seattle and come back on level terms. That I mean, I think if at the beginning of the game, a draw would have been, I think, acceptable to any fan and, you know, probably at least quietly in the locker room, but being up 2-0, you can't end up, you know, you can't end up drawing like say New York just did. So, you know, that would have been a big disappointment and a real letdown. So I think you're right that the conservative nature has been necessary in some of these cases, in particular, say a playoff game, but that's been here for a little while. It wasn't just, you know, stopping because it's the playoffs. He's been kind of building up towards that. And I think that he deserves a lot of credit for that, for recognizing they can actually win games without being that kind of flashy style all the time. And that when they need to buckle down, they can. Doesn't mean they're automatically going to win the second leg or the MLS Cup or, you know, they'll win the Champions League next year or something like that. But, you know, they have more than one gear. And I'm not sure most people knew that, including myself, up until really the last like 7 or 8 games.
Yeah. And I think that Porter deserves a lot of, I mean, frankly, he deserves credit for willing to do that and to kind of create a second, you know, every team needs to be able to play different styles, I think, especially in MLS. And so I don't, you know, I certainly don't blame him for him. I just kind of take some sick pleasure out of knowing that he kind of had to, there's like, he had to kind of sacrifice his soul in order to do it.
Yeah. But, yeah. And one other quick thing, it makes it easier that Diego Valeri has had a groin injury for like 2.5 months because he basically has to take Valeri off after an hour every game that he's not going to be able to go. I mean, he could play 90 minutes Valeri, but then you're really risking him for the next game or two games down the line or whatever. And, you know, if they can get a good solid hour out of him, even though yesterday wasn't that solid, amazing hour, they're still more dangerous with him on the field. He attracts attention from defense and all that kind of stuff. It opens up other spaces, but he has kind of a built-in excuse a little bit that he can say, well, you know, we can change things up and ease things off a little bit. And I'm going to take Valeri out to do it because he has to basically anyway.
So let me just ask you this. How does being up 2-1 play into the Timbers? I mean, is this, I would assume it's in their wheelhouse, going into a home leg is always good, but I wonder if maybe this, you know, this being the first playoff game and, you know, for all the stuff Porter said about he's got a lot of experienced guys on the team, the reality is that there's a lot of guys on this team that have it, that don't have playoff experience, that have never experienced the MLS playoffs. I mean, do you feel like that's a gift, or is it, do you feel like that there is some pressure that could be building, that now all of a sudden the expectation is that they're going to, you know, walk away hand, you know, with a, you know, easy victory in the second leg?
I think there's definitely pressure, and the Portland crowd, the same way that Seattle has pressure, you know, it's good pressure. You know, you want a good crowd that has expectations, that cares whether you win or lose. You know, that's a good pressure to have, but it also means, you know, it's a little bit scary, you know, if you're the home team and you're going out there and your fans are expecting you to win. And if you don't, kind of how does that play? I mean, the last, and I don't have the schedule up in front of me, and I'm stupid for not doing so, but I know off the top of my head that the last five home games, the Timbers have won 4-0, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0, and then drew 0-0. So, I mean, to be fair, the first one was Toronto, but then again, the next ones were Colorado, Galaxy, Seattle, and Salt Lake. So they've certainly shown against good teams that they can sort of slow it down and kind of grind out sort of ugly wins at home. Definitely the Colorado and LA games were ugly, and the Seattle and Salt Lake ones maybe weren't quite as bad, although Salt Lake was not very attractive either. So I don't think that they mind doing that. And so I think because they've done it against all the four teams that were in the playoffs also, you know, on the Western side anyway, in the last month and a half, that I don't think they're going to have any issue with this game in sort of approaching it and being worried about it, because it's like, well, this is just the fifth one of this group of games against this group of teams. And, you know, obviously there's, you know, the rivalry element to it, but, you know, I really think that this year has been weird in Portland from a team standpoint, not a fan standpoint, because that doesn't change, but because they changed like the entire team, you know, there's only a couple of guys who have really played any games against Seattle for Portland. Mm-hmm. And mostly it's guys who have had no success in it. You know, Jewsbury and you know, Nagby and a couple of other guys have played a few games. Yeah, Footy, exactly. But for the most part, you know, the team, the guys who are starting, I guess Wallace too, but, you know, a lot of the guys who are starting, Ryan Johnson and Will Johnson and guys like that, like they just haven't, it hasn't been a huge part of their life. And while they may not like the Sounders or they may not like Seattle, I don't think that the rivalry has made as much of a difference when those games come up for the players, because Porter's new to it also. So yeah. He's, you know, like maybe next year he'll be really pissed off at Ziggy about something. And, you know, but like for him, there hasn't been that instant thing like there was with John Spencer, you know, like, oh, you know, we'll bring the tissues next time if it's raining and all that kind of, I mean, like he jumped right into that.
Right. Right.
Despite actually not really having any success. Or much success against Seattle, he jumped right into the rivalry, and I think got it. I don't think Porter really cares as much about it, and so I don't think it plays as much in their approach that they're somehow, you know, going to be extra cautious because they don't want to lose specifically to Seattle, you know. So I think they're going to approach it they're going to use the exact same formation. They're almost certainly going to use the exact same lineup. You know, maybe Valencia starts instead of Ryan Johnson, but maybe not. I mean, otherwise I don't really see any potential for changes. So they're going to approach the game exactly the same way that they did the Seattle game a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, in some ways the game last night.
Well, very good. I appreciate you coming on and giving us kind of a different perspective on everything. Michael Orr, obviously, soccer made in Portland. So check out his podcast, and yeah, thanks a lot for coming, and I guess we'll see you on Thursday.
Well, I'm not done yet. I have a few more things to say.
Oh, well, we're not going to hear, I don't really want to hear them at this point.
Well, thanks, guys. No, I appreciate it. It was good to see you both yesterday.
Absolutely. You're listening to No Sadie at This. Welcome back to Nos Odietes. Before we get started on the questions, I want to remind everyone that the show is sponsored by the Seattle Boat Show. They are the largest boat show on the West Coast, coming January 24th through February 2nd at CenturyLink Field. Sounders fans, let's go yachting, learn how to get on the water, win your very own boat, and more online at seattleboatshow.com. You can also follow the Seattle Boat Show online at Facebook and Twitter, which is at Seattle Boat Show. Again, that's January 24th through February 2nd at CenturyLink Field. So, lots and lots of questions. I guess I'll handle the asking of them, and we'll go from there. And then we'll do the Goal Also question of the week after that. So, which again is, what kind of Halloween candy would the Sounders be? It's funny to me. Anyway, so this is a question on a lot of people's minds. I guess I'll answer it because I probably am more qualified to answer it, but K61 wants to know, what exactly is Oba's injury, and is it realistic to expect to see all three DPs on the field at the same time at some point in the playoffs? So the word out of the Sounders is that he has what's called a pelvic infraction, I think is the name of it, and basically what they're telling us is that it's something to do with the joint in his pelvis, which seems painful. If assuming that's what's going on, there are some doubts as to whether or not this is what's really going on. I don't have any specific reasons to doubt it. It just seems, so for now I'm assuming that that's what's going on. And, for what it's worth, he trained a couple weeks ago or not a couple weeks ago. It was ahead of the week of the Rapids game. He trained and he left the field after, missing a penalty and kind of holding his groin area. So that would suggest that he is in fact dealing with some kind of injury. I don't know the severity of it. I don't know if it's one of those things where he just has to, you know, wake, you know, the way Siggy's been saying is if he wakes up one morning and says, I'm good to go, then he's good to go. And he was at the game yesterday, for what it's worth. So, if he gets on the field, yeah, I think there's a pretty good chance that the Sounders get all three DPs on the field at one time. But I don't know what odds I would put on that happening. So this one's from Grouchy Val, wants to know, do you miss Arlo pitching Dairy Queen during telecasts?
Not really. I don't know. I mean, they were funny at the time, but
I know, kind of maybe a little old.
I really, you know what? I really like Ross Fletcher. I think that he's.
I do too. I like.
I think
Ross.
He's underrated. I might actually like Ross more than I like Arlo.
Yeah. I don't know if I like. I don't know who I would necessarily say I like better, but I like him. Yeah. I think he's done a great job, and you know, I certainly listen to quite a few local broadcasts because of MLS Live, and I think the Sounders are as good as any of them. I would imagine I would think most neutral observers would probably put them in the top three or four at the very least, maybe even the best. But yeah, I mean, Arlo's great, but I certainly don't feel like I don't watch games sitting there pining for Arlo to come back.
Yeah.
And that's not to badmouth Arlo in any way. But anyway, Tom Bureau wants to know, didn't the Sounders have poor showings versus Diamonds this season? Did they figure it out or simply play their game to win?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they definitely didn't play their game. I think.
Exactly.
And you and Michael talked about that. It wasn't their game, and I think that's probably because they've had some trouble against the Diamond. And you know, they played a very direct counter-attacking kind of game. And you know, it worked pretty well.
Yeah. It's, you know, and like I said, like I told Michael, I give him credit for doing that, but I kind of hope that Caleb tries to make a statement in the home leg and kind of tries to attack the Sounders kind of straight on. And we see a real game, 'cause that would be a lot more fun to watch and potentially. Yeah.
And honestly, I think Caleb Porter is. Sometimes Caleb Porter can't help himself. And so if anybody is going to do that, it wouldn't shock me if it was him.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. So MRBS wants to know, is our condition of great on paper but not coming together on the field due to too much and too late FO tinkering? Do you think there was time to gel?
I think that's definitely a factor. I think that I think that the Sounders kind of underperforming expectations this season is a lot of things kind of aligning. I think that the tinkering is one of them. I think that injuries have been one of them. I think that international call-ups. I think that there are a lot of factors at play, and they almost all of them have gone against the Sounders, you know. But yeah, I think it's a contributing factor to some extent.
Yeah, to some degree, it's probably unavoidable. I don't know that there is any one of these moves that I would have said I wish the Sounders hadn't made it, other than maybe the Zervando Crosco move in hindsight. But I'm having a hard time buying this idea that that move was the kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. But maybe, I mean, who knows? Maybe it was. I mean, I guess we'll never really know. And maybe after the season, the players will tell us, yeah, Zervando was really the key to whatever success we were having.
Yeah, but I'm skeptical of that.
I'm skeptical of that as well. But yeah, I mean, I think that that probably played some part, whether or not it was, you know, you look at Dempsey and you look at kind of, you go through the roster and you find all the moves they made. And this team didn't have a settled roster basically all year. And that probably contributed to some of it. I just don't know how much of it was totally avoidable. So Nicholas Griepentrong, I think is how you say his name. He wants to know who we think is going to start at center back on the away leg.
I think Jimmy and Hurtado. I mean, I think they're the two best center backs on the team. And I think that you just have to put your best pairing out there. You know, your most talented pairing. I don't think you really have a choice. If Ioane starts, I don't think it's a huge drop off. But I think that you just got to go with your best guys.
Yeah. And I think that's probably what we're going to see at this point. I mean, I think it would be a little bit panicky to at this point say we've kind of made it known that we think Traore and Hurtado are our best center backs, and now we're not going to use them. I mean, it's like you kind of at this point you got to live with the results, I think.
Yeah.
So Eileen wants to know, she's seeing a lot of doom and gloom comments. Anyone there positive we can do this Thursday? I am.
I'm not positive. I mean, but I think we can. I mean, I think that there's definitely a decent chance. I think it's 35-65 is where I'm comfortable putting it. They're good enough, you know. They're good enough to beat the Timbers in Portland. I don't have any question of that. Whether they can actually do it is another matter.
Yeah. So Dudesby wants to know, what's the disciplinary score? Are the Sounders in better or worse position? Would love to see the Timbers go down to 10 men.
I'm pretty sure that, I mean, they're going to have to get a red card to go down to 10 men.
They are. Yes. It doesn't quite work that way. Just to explain this a little bit, the way the MLS Cup playoffs work is that you get two yellow cards, you're suspended for the next game. But like we saw in the first leg, where Lamar Nagel picked up his second yellow card of the playoffs, he wasn't kicked out of this game.
Right.
So it's not like within one series the cards carry over. It's accumulation type thing. So I guess the Timbers are potentially in danger of losing a few guys for the next round, which I guess would give the Sounders some kind of sick pride in knowing that they knocked key players out of the following leg, but none of those things will help the Sounders, unfortunately.
Right. And I think if anybody is going to have a player sent off, that the Sounders are,
it's probably going to be the Sounders.
They're probably the more, I mean, Will Johnson does play for Portland. He's kind of good at getting people sent off.
Yeah. So, our good friend Brenton, Walters, who's Caps Offside on Twitter, he wants to know if we lose to Portland, can they have Siggy?
Sure, go ahead.
Siggy would probably do, I would imagine he could do wonders for
I think so.
For, yeah. Vancouver.
I think he'd be a good coach for their situation, for sure. He's good at building teams. He's very good at building teams,
absolutely. So along those same lines, Royal Brom Pitch wants to know, Siggy in, Siggy out, if the latter, who is a non-American accent required?
You know, I mean, I think I haven't really changed my mind on this. I mean, I don't think that this team is going to fall apart with Siggy in charge. I think he's a very good coach. And you know, if they keep him around, I think it'll be fine. But I think that there are legitimate reasons that you might think about making a change. And, you know, and so I wouldn't be shocked if they did. Although I would be kind of surprised at this point, I think, just because the Sounders did play really well against Colorado. It doesn't look like they're going to get blown out by Portland. There are legitimate reasons that Siggy can point to and say, you know, if you've got to give me a chance to actually have this team as it's currently put together before letting me go. But yeah, and in terms of who replaces him, I mean, there aren't really any guys in MLS save for Jason Kreese that I would rather coach this team than Siggy. And I think, you know, I've kind of changed my mind. I think I would include Porter in that just because he's done it 1 year and a lot of the Timbers' success has been based on not losing. And so I want to see if what he's doing is sustainable before I say, oh yeah, he's a better coach than Siggy. And then there's a whole host of issues that you have to watch out for when you go outside of MLS. So I don't think a non-American accent is required, but I think if you're actually going to be making an improvement, you've got one coach in MLS that, you know, that would be that improvement.
Yeah. I think that's the complicating factor here. It's not that I think Siggy, that it's impossible to improve from Siggy. And I think if you have a coach in mind that you feel like is going to be a better coach, like if the Sounders for some reason felt like they could get Jason Kreese, maybe you move on from Siggy, or maybe if they think they can get Caleb Porter. But I don't know that I think Caleb Porter is necessarily the right coach for the way that the Sounders want to run their team. I don't know that Jason Kreese is necessarily, I mean, if the Sounders are kind of committing to trying to bring in the best talent that they can possibly bring in, I don't know that you want to bring in a system guy. I think you kind of want to bring in more of a manager of men. And I don't know that there's anyone better than that in MLS than Siggy, other than maybe Bruce Arena. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know. It's going to be very interesting. If Siggy's not back next year, it's going to be very interesting to see which direction the Sounders go in, because it's going to be very telling, I think. You know, if they go out and they get a Bob Bradley, it basically means that they didn't feel like Siggy was ultimately the problem. I think they're basically saying they felt like they needed to get somebody, they needed to make a change for the sake of change. Whereas if they go out and they get a Jason Kreese, I think they're basically saying they want to kind of adopt a system and stick to it, which doesn't necessarily mean going out and getting, you know, like I don't think Jason Kreese would necessarily, if you handed him Clint Dempsey, I don't know if he would be able to, if he would necessarily be like, oh yeah, great, because well, I already have Javier Morales, and Javier Morales already, he's already on the team and he already knows how to work with these players. I don't know that, you know, in the span of 2 months, is Clint Dempsey an improvement over Javier Morales? So it's, you know, it's not as easy as picking a successor as some people seem to think it is.
Yeah.
But anyway, B.A. Kai wants to know, was Siggy right not to change to keep it, in other words, to keep the diamond? He felt like Porter did better tactically, or Siggy's tactics too rigid and too easy to game plan against?
I think that saying that Siggy's tactics are too rigid after he completely scrapped the system the Sounders have been using for most of the year in order to gain a tactical advantage. I mean, look, I think, and I'm not
damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Right. And I'm not necessarily saying that the person that's asking the question is this way, but I think that there are a lot of people who have criticisms of Siggy that they like. And so anytime the Sounders lose, they just say them. And a lot of the time it doesn't have basis in reality. And I have some significant issues with the way Siggy goes about things sometimes. But I think a lot of the criticisms that get made of the guy are just absurd. I mean, and they're just so they're so baffling because they just don't seem to have any real basis. And yeah, I mean, I think using the diamond was absolutely the right decision. I think it definitely takes the advantage of the personnel the Sounders have. I think it's probably the best system to use those guys in. It worked really, really well against Colorado. It actually worked pretty well against Portland in the run of play, and it was just not being able to finish that was really the issue for the Sounders. It wasn't a system problem at all. And you know, I think that Porter made the right decision in terms of how he set his team up and the way they went about it, but I don't I don't really feel like I can say that Siggy was outcoached in that game. You know, I think that's going a little bit too far.
Yeah, I think that it's probably. I feel like a lot of these come down to execution, and I don't know. This kind of becomes I mean, at some point, Siggy needs to be held accountable for lack of execution as well. But I don't. I'm not seeing him being outcoached in these last, you know.
No. Four games. And I think that there were times during the season that he was absolutely outcoached. But and that's going to happen to the best coaches, you know, and I think it's fair to point it out when it does happen. But I think that sometimes people want to blame someone, and he's the easiest target.
Yeah, yeah, unfortunately. So Paul Tastic 1977 asks us, will we ever see Dempsey, Johnson, and Martins on the field for a whole game, or is that yacht already sailed? So slightly different than the 3DP question.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I hope we see it on Thursday, because if we do, I'm pretty optimistic about the Sounders' chances.
Yeah.
But I just don't know. I mean, there is the question of what's really going on with Oba, which, you know, I'm inclined to believe that he is genuinely injured, but who knows? You know, I don't think anybody really knows for sure, that is talking about it, at least. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think if we don't see it against Portland or in the playoffs, that we're not going to see it, because I don't expect all three of those guys to be back next season.
I will second that opinion. So Chad Harris asks us, what's worse, a Timbers fans or herpes?
Herpes?
Yeah, I mean, I get annoyed by Timbers fans too, especially when they're getting particularly smug. But I just have a hard time working up too much hatred as a class of people for them.
Yeah, it's dumb. But
maybe we're the wrong people to ask. We're trying to be too humanistic about this. So the Desert Pope was wondering, what Timbers supporter critique of the Sounders/Sounders supporters do you most wish would be shot into the sun? So slightly different take on that question.
The Groupon fan base thing is so fucking stupid.
It's really – it is
every
really,
time,
really, yeah.
Like, banter is whatever. Like, it's not necessarily my thing, but I get it. It's part of the rivalry. And, you know, some of the Timbers Army songs about the Sounders are kind of funny, and I don't really have a problem with it, because, you know, ECS says the same things about them. It's fine. But the Groupon fan base thing is just dumb.
It's like one of those Rage Against Modern Football kind of
right.
isms.
I mean, it would be like, I can't even think of a thing that it would be like, because it's that stupid.
It is. I mean, it's really, really stupid. I mean, like, let's look at this game last night. I don't know. Maybe there was, let's just on the high end say there was 2,000 people that were there that bought Groupons, and maybe there were another 1,000 Timbers fans. So somehow we're really putting our nose up at 35,000 fans buying tickets
in
2 days.
It's so. I mean, look, if the Sounders were selling 20,000-25,000 tickets, even then, I mean, they would be at the higher end of the attendance spectrum. Right. In the league, but maybe then you could kind of score points with it. But
they
sold 67,000 tickets to a game against the Timbers.
Right.
It's just stupid. It's
stupid.
It's like leaving yourself open. And, you know, I get just in general, the whole Portland is like this working man's team and the Sounders are. It's like, do you people actually know who Merritt Paulson is related to? Like, and that's not his fault, but, like, pretending like he's, like, some, you know, bootstraps guy is just the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And it's just it all of it ties into that. It's just so dumb.
Yeah, I that was probably going to be my answer, too. I there's not a lot of things. Like, most of the stuff that Timbers fans say about Sounders, I mean, I think the plastic fan thing bugs me a lot, because I just feel like it's untrue. But yeah, the Groupon thing probably is the worst. So Mike Standish is wondering, are we getting tired of hearing Siggy open press conferences with, I thought we deserved a result, or saying, if Oba comes back?
I don't listen to coach speak in general.
Yeah. Cause I mean, a lot of that, I think people need to maybe accept that Siggy talks like a coach a lot of the time.
Yeah. And it is annoying as hell, but honestly, people only really listen to what the coaches say when the team isn't doing well or they've lost. And so, and I don't think it's crazy to say that the Sounders deserved a result. I think they definitely deserved a draw.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't blame him for being frustrated that Siggy's not, or that Oba hasn't been available.
Yeah. And he's asked, I mean, to be fair, he is asked about Oba, right. Oftentimes by me, at every press conference. So, if you're tired of that, maybe I'm the one that deserves to be, the subject of your ire. So Damon Stewart, is passing along a question, from Dave at Temple Billiards asking why?
Man, it was like a funeral in there last night. I got there probably, I don't know, 20 minutes after the game ended, and it was just dead quiet. But then, you know, people got over it, and I was talking, you know, with a friend of mine, basically, like, I think that, like, losing is bad enough, and losing to Portland is even worse.
It was the first loss to Portland since, apparently, in Seattle since 2005, right. Which also sucks.
And all of that sucks, but I think everyone was like, you know what, this might be the last time we're here, you know, this season. This might be the last game of the season, and everybody kind of cheered up, but...
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, it doesn't answer the question at all, because I don't...
Yeah, I don't think we have that answer, but I think that is a good answer to that question. So Under the Table Fan wants to know, has Michael Sprinning played his last game for the Sounders?
I sure as hell hope not.
I hope not too, and I don't think I honestly expect Sprinning to start against the team. I mean, if Hahnemann had pitched a shutout and like looked amazing in goal, maybe you just ride the hot hand in the second leg. But you know, Hahnemann was, like I said earlier on the show, Hahnemann wasn't bad, and I think Hahnemann is a very capable backup, and he. You know, I think he is a somewhat calming presence back there. At the same time, I don't think he's going to steal a result for you. And I think Sprinning is probably more likely to be capable of stealing a result. And I'm kind of expecting him to play. And maybe if Sprinning plays badly, maybe that ends up being his last game. But I think we're going to at least see one more game. And I'm hopeful that he's back next year. So Dave Clark asks us, at what point do we start roster baiting?
I do it all the time on my own time, but I think as long as we're playing, you know, we have to talk about the games.
Yeah, we do.
When we're in the off season, we'll start roster baiting then. But as long as we're still talking about the games, we're gonna still be talking about the games.
So without getting too far ahead of ourselves, SSFC Rumors wants to know what we think Zach Iwani's role on this team is going to be next year.
I'm not even convinced that he'll have one. I mean, it's a tough question.
It's a complicated situation too, because he's going to have to agree to take a significant. I mean, this is just to explain how this would have to go down. My assumption that he's going to have to agree, if he stays in Seattle, he's going to have to agree to take a pay cut. Now, if he refuses to take a pay cut, then the Sounders could trade his rights, which is entirely possible. He's probably got a decent trade market. But those teams, I mean, I don't know how many teams out there really want to take Steve Zakuani at his current number. So then, assuming no team is willing to take him at his current number, that would mean he would have to go into the reentry draft. The first stage of the reentry draft basically means that you would be paid essentially what you're paid now. I would assume no one would take him in that part, and then he would go into the second stage of the reentry draft, and then at that point, whoever takes him can just start over fresh and renegotiate with him. But you have to imagine that if he's going to start over from fresh contract negotiations-wise, maybe he'd be willing to do that in Seattle. So it's a lot of steps to get him to the point where he's no longer with this team, which is part of why I think ultimately he'll agree to take less money to stay in Seattle. But, you know, we'll see.
And, you know, I mean, he can there's no reason for him to sign a long term contract.
Yeah, he could sign a 1 year deal for $150,000. And I'm sure he would. I don't think he's going to, you know, go hungry making what.
Right.
And Johnson's made the last couple of years.
If he plays well, then he'll get a bigger deal. I mean, that's, you know, I doubt the Sounders would have trouble paying him if he played well. But I don't blame them for not wanting to pay him what he's making now either.
Right. So a couple kind of silly questions before we get into the question of the week. Eileen is passing along the news that apparently there are no kegs on the bus trip to Portland. So what would we suggest that we bring to drink other than beer, keeping in mind that I don't think you can take any bottles on the bus?
Yeah. They've got those pocket shot things that are like in the little like plastic bags almost.
Yeah.
That seems perfect for that. Although there's just something about those things that screams, I need help.
Yeah.
they really do. Every time I see them, I get depressed. But, you know, I think they make sense in this situation here.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably a good one. I'm trying to think, what else doesn't come in glass? I mean, I guess you could take a presumably a flasks are still good. Yeah. I hear Jello shots are going to be passed around.
Oh, that's nice. You can do Franzia.
Yeah. Just
get a space bag and go nuts. That's
there you go.
Way
there
more depressing than the pocket shot. But
I love the idea of someone taking their box wine out of the box and maybe loading that into a backpack.
I did that in high school all the time.
There you go.
Yeah.
So lots of options. You just got to be a little creative. So the final question comes to us from Thurston Howell V. He wants to know if we have any recommendations for a hangover drink. He's asking for a yacht full of friends.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about booze, you know, hair of the dog kind of stuff, I'm the wrong person to ask. Because if I have a hangover, just even the thought of alcohol is awful.
Man, I am a huge fan of Bloody Marys. If I could drink Bloody Marys every day, I might do it. I love Bloody Marys.
Oh, they're so gross.
Oh, my God.
It's so gross.
So good. I could drink those all day. I would almost be willing to have non-alcoholic Bloody Marys. That's how much I like Bloody Marys.
You could just make some tomato soup and then leave it in the fridge for a week, and there you go.
Exactly. Yeah, that's good. That sounds great.
It's borscht with vodka in it. That's all it is.
Yeah, that's great. I love it.
I stick to Gatorade usually.
Yeah, Gatorade's a good one. Because
I'm an athlete. I need to replenish my electrolytes.
There's a person I used to hang out with sometimes that he would take Gatorade with him whenever you'd go drinking, and he would alternate Gatorade and
it's a good
booze.
Idea.
It's a good idea. It's kind of you kind of look like an idiot, but you're right. It's practically a very good idea.
I'm not concerned with looking like an idiot, luckily.
Fair enough. So here we are now at the point where we're going to do our Golasso question of the week, and it was, what kind of candy would the Sounders be? Lots of good responses here, so we'll just get started. Nicholas Griepentrong says will be Reese's peanut butter cups. They come in different shapes and sizes, but for some reason the ratio is never quite right.
I don't know if I agree with that.
The Desert Pope says warheads, which I'm not sure I remember warheads.
Oh, the atomic warheads? You don't remember those?
I kind of vaguely remember that.
They're like little jawbreakers that are super, super sour.
They're
great.
He describes them. Delicious in spite of causing pain, doubles as what Roth drops on the roster if we don't beat Portland. Billy Dusks says we'd be Raisinettes. They sound good at first, but after 10 minutes you realize they look like crap and you lose all hope.
when I worked at a movie theater, we used to do combo deals or whatever to get rid of like excess candy, and they
were
always
in there.
Always Raisinettes. Always. And people are like, can I have this candy? And it's like, no, you have to take this and that. That's okay. You keep it.
You could throw that away on your way out, but we're going to act like we got money for it. Jason Perkowski says we'd be Twix. The 2000 slogan was, it's all in the mix, and that's Siggy on the lineup. And the 90s slogan was, two for me, none for you. What we need to do in Portland.
Not bad.
Not bad, yeah. Kind of had to think about it a little bit, but it's pretty good. Sam Williams, we'd be Laffy Taffy. Seriously, we are so frustrated, all we can do is laugh, right?
No, I just drank instead.
Right. Neil Loomis says we'd be 100 grand. We have a lot of money, but then you put it in your mouth and it tastes like shit. I like 100 grand. I think 100 grands are great.
I don't know if I've ever had a 100 grand.
They're like chocolate with Rice crispy, rice in them with like a caramel and cookie.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, they're not, I mean, I don't know. I'm offended by that. By this guy, actually. Jordan Grangruth says, and now and later, we play plurally at the beginning and at the end, but not in the between.
Yeah.
SSFC Rumors says we'd be the Four Musketeers, Alonzo, Dempsey, EJ, and Oba.
That's not actually a candy bar.
I guess it's not. Three Musketeers is the candy bar. That's but like a good try, though.
It's an off-brand, fake Three Musketeers.
Yeah. What's the off-brand Little Debbie, or is Little Debbie an off-brand of a bigger brand? Anyway, Colin Johnson says we'd be Rocky Road, a few sweet spots mixed in with a few nuts. Looks like crap, but pretty delicious. Royal Rump Pitch says an apple with a razor blade in it.
That's a good one.
Aaron Reiner says we'd be Sour Patch Kids. They really are amazing. They get sticky and make your mouth hurt, but you keep coming back. That's pretty good. I actually am a big fan of Sour Patch Kids.
They're good.
Substellar Music says first they're sour, then they're sweet. Sour Patch Kids, sweet, sour, gone.
There's a theme developing here, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Bill Jones says Lemonheads. They look like the electricity kit. You get screw face when you put them in your mouth, but keep eating them anyway. And then Grouchy Vowel says Milk Duds, sad face.
There's some good ones. There are some good ones. That was a good suggestion, I think.
Yeah, it was. So
yeah, it was fun. I
feel like Grouchy should get credit for Grouchy was the one that actually suggested this contest. So
yeah.
We'll give him absolutely something. But do you have another one that you want to give to?
The apple with a razor blade in it was pretty good. And
is Royal Brown Pritch actually going to collect their prize since it's like an anonymous account?
Yeah, I don't know. I also liked Raisinets. That was a good one too.
The Raisinets was good. The Raisinets had the best story. Ended up having the best story.
Right.
So
there you go. Let's go with Raisinets. It's pretty accurate too.
Yeah,
actually,
it is. So Billy Duss, you're our winner. So congratulations. Make sure to get in contact with us and we'll get the Golosso prize pack out to you one way or the other. So anyway, we've been talking about possibly putting together a viewing party for the MLS Cup one way or the other. So we're going to try and work on that. If you're interested in getting together with us and the guys over at Sounder at Heart, which is me and Dave and Aaron and all kinds of other people, I think we're going to try to make that happen. So put that on your social calendar. But other than that, hopefully we have another show to talk about upcoming games. If not, I think we'll have a show next week either way, but I would hate to promise anything and then not come through. So we'll have shows. We'll be with you one way or the other at some point during the off season. But we are we do have real lives that have demands of us, so we don't want to make too many heady promises. But in the meantime, I really want to thank our sponsors. Also say congratulations to Zach, who got married this weekend. So congratulations to him.
And condolences to Amanda.
And condolences to Amanda. Exactly. This is in for a long trudging trip from here on out, from what I can tell. But thanks to our sponsors, Full Pool Wines, Verity Credit Union, the Seattle Boat Show, and Golosso. This was Nos Audietes, and remember,
down our wild mountains and canyons she flew, Canadian Northwest to the ocean so blue. It's roll on, Columbia, roll on, roll on, Columbia, roll on, roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. Roll on, Columbia, roll on.